Hey gang, let's face it, you're probably listening to this show and all of your other shows on your phone. Are you tired of filling up your phone with all of your favorite podcasts? Well, you stream your movies, you stream your music, you even stream your porn. Why not stream your podcast? Try Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is an app that allows you to stream over 30,000 shows right to your smartphone or pad. Get the very best in news, comedy, entertainment, science, and sports delivered right to your phone or pad. Download it for free at Stitcher.com or find it in your app store. That's Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope that you guys all had a really great weekend. I did. Had a really crazy weekend. I'll tell you about it in a minute. I have a great show for you guys today. Greg Gonzalez from the band Money Chicha, from the band Brownout, and from the band Grupo Fantasma is here today. We have a fantastic conversation about all things with those bands, but mostly Money Chicha. Their new band, Echo en Mexico, is out now. You can find it, go to moneychicha.com, you can find it on iTunes, on the Spotify, on all the places where you find music. It's a fantastic record. I believe it's their first album as that band, and they've been playing for a few years, and I've seen them a lot. They had a residency at the Continental Club Gallery here, on and off, over the last couple years, and I've gone to them when they play them, and I love their music. I love the band, I love the players, I love Adrian Quesada. I've known him for a couple years. He's a really nice guy, too. So it was really nice to sit down and talk to Greg Gonzalez, man. We talked about what it's like to balance all three of those bands and how they do it. How, you know, because most of them are in all of the bands. Like most of Money Chicha is in Brownout and in Grupo Fantasma. And they all serve a different purpose. Money Chicha focuses mostly on like a Latin psych sound that's based on the music of Peru and Colombia in the 60s and 70s. So, and the rest of them, Brownout's more of a funk band, and they do the Brown Sabbath, which I have on vinyl. I love that album. I need to go pick up this Money Chicha album on vinyl, because I love it, and I love them. You're going to really enjoy this conversation with Greg. The guy is fascinating, super smart, and a music historian of that whole region. Plus, he played with Prince. Yeah. So, yeah, that's amazing. Okay, we're going to get to my conversation with the fantastic Greg Gonzalez in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. I had a great weekend, played a lot of shows. Friday went up to Round Rock, played with Skyrocket at this new Hanover's 2.0. That was an interesting show. I had a little bit of a meltdown, and I fucked up a song by ending it like kind of in the middle of it because I got distracted. Why? Because there was a lady leaning on my monitor with her purse on the stage, just all open, texting, just randomly texting. Bummed me out, lost my train of thought, lost my vision, and fucked up a song for my band. Anyway, I'm not blaming her. It's my fault. I should have been able to power through it. I just all of a sudden went into my head, like, why is this lady on the phone? What are you doing? Are you literally leaning against my monitor while I'm singing to you, just flipping through your phone, just doing stuff on your phone? Hey, lady, yeah, stop doing it. Don't do that. If you go to a show, don't text. Don't sit in front of the band and text. Go to the back. Go to the bathroom. Go outside. Just go away from right in front of the band. That's courteous. Thank you. Okay, so that happened. We played, and then Saturday went to Houston, went to my grandma's house, hung out with my little cousin, my aunt, my cousin Jennifer, and my grandma, just kind of hung out, took a nap, went down and played Continental Club in Houston that night. It was a great show. Super packed. Those shows are always crazy, super high energy, super energetic, and we made each other laugh a lot that night on stage. It was very funny. So yeah, we had a great time. Sunday, went back to my grandma's, had some breakfast, did some stuff, headed back to Austin, went and met up with my friend AJ Vallejo, who was playing with his band Bang, the heavy metal cover band that he has, at ACL 310 Theater here. And then after their show, which was fantastic, by the way, we went upstairs to the ACL Moody Theater and saw Alice Cooper. Dude, if you've never seen Alice Cooper, which I had never seen, I mean, I've seen the footage, I know the stories, I know the thing, right? but I'd never actually seen it in person. It is fucking amazing, dude. That guy puts on a show. I mean, he's got to be like almost 72, man. And it is a show where every song, something new is happening. Three guitar players, super metal, super, obviously Alice Cooper out stage, a giant Frankenstein during the song Frankenstein, where he turns into Frankenstein. He has a sword. He comes out with a snake during a song. There's a box that keeps opening and people come out and hand him things. It's unbelievable, man. The guy has this energy that's unstoppable. And AJ and I were talking. We were like, man, you just don't have to stop doing this, you know? Rock and roll is something like you didn't think you could do it forever at the beginning, but you really can. And you kind of want to because you love it so much. There's no reason for Alice Cooper to be on tour. I can't imagine that he's so poor he's got to go on the road to feed himself. I don't think so. I think he's doing it because he likes to play. I mean, Paul McCartney is a great example. Look at him. He does not have to go out and play shows, yet he does a lot. Plays a lot of shows. He brings the music to the people. Maybe he feels a responsibility. Like, hey, I'm this guy that made all this stuff that you guys all like. I'm going to go around and show it to you. Same thing with the Stones. They don't need the money, for God's sake. I don't think so. Do they? I wonder if Money Chicha, Grupo Fantasma, and Brownout, and whatever other offshoots these guys have, because it seems like every few years they get restless. There's a style of music that they want to go into, so they start a new band that makes it happen, which is what they did with Money Chicha. So, enjoy my conversation with the amazingly talented and fascinating Mr. Greg Gonzalez from Money Chicha, Grupo Fantasma, and Brownout, all right? Have a great week. Let's get down. Was the thing that you played in Denmark, was it like a metal festival?
No, it's called, I'm probably totally saying this wrong, but Smukfest, S-M-U-K Fest, you know, and it's like a whole city festival sort of thing, you know, so like they shut down the whole city, it seems like everybody in town is a volunteer, but it's a huge festival. When we were there, the next night, the headliner was Sting.
Oh,
and
wow.
The night after that was Rihanna. So it was, jeez. You know, mega bands. I mean, we played like the 1 p.m. slot on one of the good stages, you know. But it was very diverse kind of band situation. We ran into some New Orleans cats there. There was some bluegrass bands. There was world music. It's a beautiful thing when you play festivals in Europe and you realize like, oh, wow, you know, they really have quite as many hang-ups as Americans do about their music festivals being diverse. Like, the idea of a music festival being diverse here is like, well, we're going to have one top 40 rock band, one top 40 country band, one top 40 hip-hop artist, some old guys who had hits back in the days, and then maybe smatter in a couple up-and-comers who are still kind of in that mainstream kind of genre. You know, over there, it's like really diverse. You know, they don't freak out on the fact that I'm playing Latin music at the same festival as like a hip-hop band. You know, and there's like bands from Africa also playing, and then like French traditional bands and some sort of cabaret New Orleansy thing going on. You know, they a lot of times they call it a jazz festival, which is really funny to me because there's very little jazz at jazz festivals.
Right.
But it'll be like, you know, super diverse, and they don't seem to have the same kind of genre hang-ups that Americans do, or at least American festivals, I should say, because Americans probably don't have those hangups. I don't know. Nobody I know does. Everybody I know listens to all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. It seems like it's like that now. Like, I mean, do you know any kids? Like kids that are like 15 to 18?
No, but I know I teach young adults, I guess you would call them. They're not teenagers. They're like 18 to 25-year-olds and occasionally older people too.
Right.
You know, it's like I teach at a school up north called the Recording Conservatory of Austin, and
that's an intense sounding school.
It sounds a lot more heavy duty than it is. I mean, ultimately, it's a vocational school for audio engineers.
Oh, okay,
which sounds a lot less impressive, but it's actually very, you know, timely kind of stuff, and they make it very relevant. They don't just, you know, the whole school started because the teacher was tired. He got a music degree and was playing music, and he started a studio. And through his experience getting a music degree, he realized, like, well, you know, people are learning about music, but it's like they're checking off all the boxes. I can arrange, I can do theory, I can harmonize stuff, I can write a song, and I can read a chart, and I can read music up and down, and I have ear training in music theory and history and appreciation and all this stuff. But nobody ever taught him how to plug it into being a working musician, how to network, how to have a business structure, create a business model.
It's huge.
You know, yeah, there's all these other aspects, you know, how to create a website or how to market yourself. You know, nobody ever pushed him to create something. It was like, it was all there for you. You know, you show up and there's the combo that they picked for you, and you play with the combo. You never have to put a band together. You never have to be a band leader. You know, you show up and they're like, here's the music we curated for you to play based upon your talents.
Right.
You know, so he wanted to create an environment that kind of, not only did it teach people how to do audio engineering, but it also kind of gave them a kick in the ass to have to conceptualize accounting, like how to do QuickBooks.
Real-world prep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whether they do it or not is, you know, that's kind of beyond. And a lot of people don't finish, and they don't finish not because of the musical portion or the audio engineering portion. It's actually those other parts that they scoff at. They're like, oh, I got to make a website. Oh, I have to have a DBA set up or come up with a name for my production company and a logo, you know?
You know what I like
.
Is I think that you walk the walk, because your name is at the bottom of the websites and stuff. Do you do those?
I do, yeah. I'm on some of them.
You're the guy.
I do a lot of that stuff, you know, it's kind of weird because that's not what I teach. I teach composition.
Right.
And
right, so, but I mean, it's part of the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be able to sell yourself.
Absolutely.
Sometimes that feels embarrassing, but there is a way to do it.
No doubt. And, you know, my ultimate goal in that regard is to, like, take those, you know, to me, it's like, I'm an intern at my own company, you know, it's like, I'm learning how to do this stuff the hard way, and the more capable I get at it, eventually I'm hoping that I can market those skills and be able to help other people. You know, it's like the older I get, the more I want to help other people not have to make those mistakes and be like, hey, do you have your LLC together? Are you keeping good accounting? Do you have like a merch inventory? Have you figured out how to make spreadsheets yet? You know, how's your social media game? All this other stuff that you have to do. Like, have you spoken with a record label? What do your contracts look like? Do you know a lawyer? You know, like all these things that people don't even consider. They're just like, man, I just want to play music, and more power to them, because that's what all I want to do. But
yeah, but there's no way to get anything done now.
Exactly. It,
the days of like not knowing what's going on and some guy right. telling you to go to a place, that's only happening for like 18 people right now
yeah.
in the world.
It happened for me briefly, and I don't know if it was for better or worse. You know, it was
when
it,
was that?
There was a point with Grupo Fantasma, you know, I didn't always handle all this stuff. You know, initially the band was very self-sufficient. You know, we handled everything ourselves as far as like tour managing, booking, you know, it wasn't so much me. It was mainly our saxophone player at the time, Dave Lobel, who is now a band manager. You know, he's moved on into that realm, you know, but he was booking the band and whatever. And we would, you know, all consult together on like marketing concepts, how to brand the show, you know. And I started off like making flyers at Kinko's and stuff, and then learning how to use Photoshop, you know. And then we got our first real manager, and for a while it was like, okay, I don't have to do anything, you know. And his words us exactly was like, you guys need to be creative as possible, kick ass, and don't worry about this other stuff. We're gonna handle that, you know. We're gonna handle the nuts and bolts. And at first it was great. It worked awesome. You know, he got us some really good spots. He got us into Prince's Ear, which helped us work with Prince, you know, Grupo. But after that kind of started to fizzle a little bit, we were like, well, what's happening next? You know, what's our next goal? You know, we had a vision, and it didn't seem like he really cared to hear that. You know, he was like, no, I'm the professional here. Let me do the management. You guys just make music. And we were like, no, we want to know what's going on. You know, we want to be part of it. We want to be on those emails. We want to be in the room when these meetings are happening. We want to, you know, we understood we were young and didn't know shit, and we were probably cocky. But at the same time, it was like, if somebody else does all this stuff for us, then what the hell are we building? You know, we're like totally going to be dependent on managers and people for the rest of our lives. And if this guy decided to bail on us, like, what do we have, you know? So we decided to bring it back in-house and take over it again, you know, after that. And for a long run, we worked with Dave Lobel again. You know, our former sax player became our band manager after that, you know? And it was cool. He worked as a buffer and he did a lot of the work for us. But at the same time, we were engaged in the process. It was like, this is how we want to be seen. This is the kind of gigs we want to play. This is the kind of stuff we want to do, you know? And he did a really good job as far as that goes. But, you know, eventually you outgrow stuff like that.
Yeah.
And things change and the situations change, you know, business happens and fatigue sets in,
yeah.
You know, so we had to take it back even from him, you know, he needed him to grow and we needed to grow. And it just came to a place where it was like, you know what, we're all adults here. We need to take over our business even more now. And you need to move on. If you're going to be a band manager, you're taking up way too much time on us, to be honest, you know?
Yeah.
So it was rough at first, but it ended up being really amicable, you know, and he's doing well on his own. And, you know, it was a rough stretch for us. But at the end of the day, we learned a whole lot. And now we've, you know, myself and the other people involved in that, you know, feel a lot more engaged again. You know, you gotta continually challenge yourself like that. You know, if you just let somebody do all your business, at the end of the day, you end up not knowing anybody, you know.
Yeah.
You end up just being a prima donna.
Yeah. Yeah, and that doesn't really work anymore.
Yeah.
Like, there's not really a lot of room for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially not in bands as big as ours.
Well, then, man, I know this is just weird going off into this management thing, but it's pretty fascinating to think, like, how then do you manage, how does the three-band thing work out? Is that a difficult thing to juggle, or does each band have a cycle of how they, like, Grupo is going to be doing this and doing these kind of things. Mm-hmm. Well, Brown Out, we're going to spend this time doing these festivals and this, and then it'll be time for Money Chicha, right, getting a residency at Gallery. And
well, each band kind of, you know, each band kind of developed organically on its own to fulfill a need that we had creatively initially.
Can I just interrupt you? Mm-hmm. I know Adrian out of you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
That shit, it's palpable. When you see you play, there's so much of that coming off of you guys that it does make sense when you start something else. Mm-hmm. It's making the hair on my arm stand up. Like, seriously, like I, every time I've seen you guys, I'm just moved. And the musicianship and just there's a confidence too that you guys exude.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's being Latino and having, like, you know, no matter how cool and laid back and liberal you are, you're still a dude, you know?
I don't know if that's necessarily it. I mean, so some members of the band used to call it the Illuminati of Laredo, you know, because it used to be like all the Laredo guys were the root of Grupo Fantasma initially, and then Brownout, you know? Yeah. And now, to another extent, Money Chicha, you know, but that's just kind of how it worked out. It wasn't like a macho thing. It's like we grew up together, developed our sounds and our approach, and like created a language that we understand, and a way of being both loose and playful and also businesslike, you know, a way of handling our business that we can all communicate in a way that's very effective and efficient, that is difficult with other people. Like, sometimes when you speak with somebody outside of it, it's a little bit hard to convey things. You know, when I work with musicians who aren't part of the bubble,
right,
you know, I find that they don't have the same experiences. They don't have the same nuanced understanding that we do, because they had a different experience. You know, we came from a very strange, sheltered existence in a way in Laredo, where you don't hear all the stuff that's going on in the bigger world. You're kind of off on your own, you know, and you find out a different way of discovering music. But we're all from the same generation too, so we can all communicate with the same references, you know. We all grew up listening to the same rock and roll, Guns N' Roses and Nirvana and Beastie Boys and, you know, NWA and Dr. Dre and, you know, Wu-Tang Clan and whatever. And then we came here and we got into Latin music at the same time and listened to the same obscure Latin music that wasn't the stuff that people were listening to on the radio, that we didn't listen to all the Selena and whatever was popular. We were listening to this like 60s and 70s Fania All-Stars and Discos Fuentes from Colombia and you know, and Andres Landeros and all this like obscure stuff. So we all had very similar influences so that we could communicate a style of music to each other because we all understood where we were coming from. We could like, oh, that beat needs to sound more like a Wu-Tang beat, or that needs to sound more like that Fania All-Stars style of arranging with the two trombones of Willie Colon or whatever, you know?
Right.
And these obscure specific things we had talked about in van rides and hanging out and listening to music and whatever, it was just very easy to communicate. Other people, we would say, hey, could you play more like Willie Colon? They're like, who's Willie Colon?
Right.
And we're like, yeah, okay, now I need to teach you about this style of music. I need to teach you about this kind of cumbia and these very specific stylistic things that we all take for granted at this point. I mean, at this point, it's gone beyond just the Laredo group, you know, because we've been playing so long together. I think the newest member of Grupo at this point is John, our drummer, and he's been with the band for 5 or 6 years. He played with Ocote Soul Sounds and Adrian for many years, even before that. So he's very familiar with our references, and we've all listened to similar music, you know. But there's dudes who've been playing together for 10 years, 15 years. Myself and Beto, we started playing together in eighth grade. So I've been playing with him for like 25 years.
Jesus.
So we have this super deep well of collective experience to draw on that makes it very easy to channel something, you know, and to be creative. It's like having a shorthand for creativity, you know. Instead of having to write everything out specifically, you can be like, let's do this play, you know, and everyone already knows what that means, you know.
Yeah.
But it's going back to the three band thing, you know, juggling this many bands is a challenge, you know, more so from managing your time and, you know, being able to find time to be creative in three different personalities. You know, I think of it like these buddy movies that people make where they have like the actors that work well together and everybody knows them, you know, the Gene Wilder and the Richard Pryors or Danny Glover and Mel Gibson or whatever, you know, the Ocean's 11 cast, you know, guys do different movies with the same groups of people and they're playing different characters, but it's like you have the sequels of Rush Hour, but then you go and make Friday and then you go and make someone else, same cats, the same production group, the same everything. And it's a success every time.
Yeah.
Cause you like the characters and their chemistry, even if they're telling a different story.
Yeah.
If they're a comedy this time and they're an action movie next time, it doesn't matter. They still have the same chemistry on screen. They still have that same natural, you know, appeal to people. And that's kind of how the different groups work for me. It's like different movie franchises with the same actors and the same production company. But, you know, one is a sci-fi and one is an action movie and one is a horror movie or whatever, you know. Usually, one of the things that's been really interesting to me about all these bands is the way they tend to happen is, like, we get turned on to some music that's really obscure to us and we want to share it with the world. And it's like, this isn't out there. Nobody here is doing this, you know. Let's do this and show people what it's about. And that becomes the impetus to become our own thing. So, like, for instance, Grupo Fantasma, we had a funk band that played at like college parties. It was called the Young Silly Bitches. And it was really us, like, as 21, 22, 23 year olds wanting to play, you know, funk grooves for 20 minutes and, you know, get drunk and talk to girls, you know, and smoke a bunch of pot or whatever it was we were doing back then. And then we got turned on to this music of Colombia that nobody was playing. You know, we were familiar with cumbia music, being from the border, you know. At the time it was the drummer, Johnny, our singer, Brian Ramos, myself, Beto and Adrian, you know, the five of us were all from the border and we all understood cumbia, but we had never heard the roots of cumbia. It's like, it's like if you had only heard Los Lonely Boys, nothing against them, but you were like, oh, this is the blues. And then someday somebody showed up with like Muddy Waters and Lead Belly and was like, check this out. And you're like, whoa, mind blown. That stuff I thought was great. I thought Stevie Ray was great.
Right.
But now I've heard something different that's like way more, you know, grimy and like fundamental sounding or something. And that's the kind of cumbia that we heard. And we were like, man, we want to do that. Nobody's doing this big band sounding cumbia. Everyone was we knew of was doing it with keyboards and accordions.
Yeah.
So we were like, let's do that. But we didn't know a damn thing about it. So we were just like, we took a funk band and tried to play cumbia with it, you know, and we only had, you know, seven songs maybe. So we would play them for 20 minutes long, and it became like a workshop where we figured out our style by jamming on these styles of music. Later on, you know, we got introduced into the traditions, you know, about a year after we brought in Jose Galeano, our singer for Grupo. And he's from Nicaragua. His uncle is Chepito Areas from the original Santana band. And so that's how he learned how to play timbales and percussion, listening to Santana music from being from the Caribbean and being from Central America. So he was very familiar with more of that root himself, you know. So he came and kind of schooled us on the tradition and on some of the musical forms and whatever, and all started coming together at that point, you know. Later on with Brownout, again, it was a similar thing. Like, we, at this point, we were having some success with Grupo. We played with Prince. And that really re-inspired in us our love of funk. You know, we were like, man, Prince reminded us how much we love playing funk. You know, we're doing Latin music with funky elements. But, man, we played in a funk band, the Young Silly Bitches. We had funk bands in high school, whatever, you know. And we got the baddest horn section and percussion.
Did you ever tell Prince the name of that? Because Prince might have loved the name the Young Skinny Bitches.
Young Silly Bitches.
Young Silly Bitches.
No. Okay. You know, we didn't have... I think if we'd had more time, we might have gotten to a point where we could have been a little more relaxed to talk about that stuff. I think we were so intimidated the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was a very quick 18 months or something of just, like, being schooled by one of the highest masters.
What a great school to go to, though, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the no turning back point, you know. I mean, there was a point where I was like, okay, I'm gonna quit my job and tour with bands and whatever, and to me that was kind of like a no turning back point. But still, you know, my parents are like, well, you still got your college degree to fall back on, and you do this and that and whatever. And then after you've dealt with Prince and played in front of 20,000 people in London and he's chanting your band's name, that's when you're like, okay, I'm validated. Nobody can question this anymore. They're like, hey, Prince likes it. I don't care what you think.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Your parents are like, okay, you played with Prince. I get it. You're a musician now. You're going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, everybody at that point recognized, you know, there's no turning back. You've pretty much, you know, you're a made man, you know, like in the mob when they say you're made now.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you played with Prince. You've been made. Now you have something that's unfuckwithable about you, you know?
Well, you guys have a Grammy too, right?
We do, but we didn't at that time.
No.
You know, at that time it was just like...
But still, I wonder, like, in your mind, which one weighs heavier? I think playing with Prince would weigh heavier than just winning a Grammy.
Absolutely. You know, the Grammys is a whole nother long story.
I got a great side of it, like the truck stop story from Adrian and stuff that. So... Let's get to Money Chicha.
Okay.
So you guys had already had Brownout, and then how did Money Chicha come about?
Well,
just the love of that music.
There was a point before we won our Grammy.
Okay.
After our first nomination.
That's a great thing to be able to say. Start a paragraph.
I know. Before we won our Grammy, after our first nomination for a Grammy, and, you know, this is something that any musician who's survived long enough as a musician will tell you. This thing has some ebbs and flows, and some of the valleys are very dark.
Yes, my friend.
And some of the peaks are very high, you know, and it'll probably take you 10 or 15 years of experiencing that before you learn how to never get too high or never get too low, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a big San Antonio Spurs fan, and part of the reason was because that's their motto, never too high, never too low. They've won championships, they've lost... They refuse to, like, let it go to their head, and they refuse to let themselves get down when they don't win.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like a level of maturity that it takes a long time to get to. But at one point, I wasn't quite there yet, and I think we were in kind of a valley at that point. It was a little bit dark. People were struggling, you know. Financially, it's hard to have a band this big.
Yeah.
Even when you split it into two bands so you can work twice as much, it's hard, you know. When you're trying to find direction and people are having children and, you know, all of the crises of growing up Sorry, that's all right. All the crises of growing up and dealing with grown-up shit, buying houses, paying taxes, all start coming home to you, and you're like, man, what am I doing? Like, how am I going to resolve this? How am I going to do this until I'm ready to retire? And what the hell is a retirement if you're a musician? You know, there's an existential crisis that you go through at a certain point. You know, you're in your 30s, you've already toured a whole bunch, you know, and you're seeing the limitations of your business model. You're seeing the resistance you get when you play creative original music that's not anywhere near mainstream, you know. And even in spite of successes and all these other things, you're like struggling, you know. And Money Chicha was just one of several attempts during that period to try and find other ways to express ourselves, you know, to get out of, like, you know, as much as I love the sound of a big band, I love performing with a huge group like that, it's like a Herculean task to move a band like that.
I know
that.
Exactly, yeah.
To be
yeah.
like, okay, I want to write a song. Okay, so first you write all the rhythm parts, right? And then you write your melodies and you create your form. Now you have to create vocal parts for three vocalists. Now you have to create percussion parts for three percussionists. Now you have to create horn parts for three horns, you know, and it's like, oh. And then when you create your horn parts, you have to get them arranged. And when you create your vocal parts, your vocalists have to create lyrics, you know. And when you create your percussion stuff, your percussionists have to take that and digest it and make it into something that's valid as a percussion thing, you know. There's all kinds of stuff that they have to deal with on their own, you know. You have to fit all these little pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together and on top of that, balance all the personalities of everyone involved to not sabotage it at any point in the process, to have somebody just go like, you know what, this song sucks, I'm not feeling this, but to let them have enough faith in the process to be like, okay, we've been working on this for 3 weeks, it's not clicking, maybe it's my part, you know, to let go of their own ego enough to say, I'm gonna try something different until it works, you know. It's beautiful when it happens, but it's also slow and difficult process sometimes to get music together. So on top of that, touring, you have to have all these vans.
Yeah, Jesus,
you have to pay for booking agents, managers, you know, everything is so expensive and so complicated that Money Chicha was one of the reactions against that. Was like, let's just create something that we can do on our own. Where I can go sit down in front of a computer and write a song and it stays exactly like I wrote it. Because I can play bass, I can play guitar, I can play keys, I can sequence the heck out of the drums. Don't have to write lyrics because it's instrumental music. You know, any melodies I write on the keyboard, I'm going to write them easy enough that I can play. Guitar parts, I can play. Anything that I write, I can show to somebody. I don't have to create charts. Don't have to write lyrics. I don't have to get it approved. If people listen to it and they're like, I like that, the song is done. You know, and then if we decide to play a show at a concert, we don't have to worry about guarantees, contracts, hotel rooms, flights, booking agents. There's all that overhead is gone. It's just us, you know, six dudes at the time. Now it's five, you know. If we did decide to tour, we could stay in two or three rooms, you know, we could fit in one van, you know, we could get by on lower guarantees and still at the end of the day walk with more money and
also ultimately have more fun without all of that weight.
Exactly. It gave us at first, we were the band that never rehearsed. That was like one of our things. It's like we never rehearsed for about 3 years. We would just play the songs and let them go where they went. And sometimes it ended up being a different song because somebody forgot their parts. And you're like, okay, this part is jamming now. Oh, we went to another part. Oh, remember that other song? Let's do that. You know, but because we played in all these other bands and played together so long, we could do that. We could be like, remember that part from that other song? Let's go to that. You know, and we would just have that freedom and that looseness about it that made it really fun.
There is such a looseness that when you told me how you do the songs and you write them and you do all the parts and you give them to the people, it really sounds like a band that gets in a room and like when he starts doing something, another dude picks it. Like almost like when you see you live. That's how I think you create those songs. That's how silly I am.
No. I mean, it's got that looseness and that freedom. You know, it's like I said, it's not written down music. It's not super structured because you have all these people following along. It's like got a looseness where we can improvise and break free and stretch out and try goofy things. Like, hey, let's cover a Prince song and do it instrumental Chicha style. Let's cover a Sabbath song. Let's cover whatever. Just for fun, you know, we could mess around and do all these fun things like that. And it's a lot easier. You know, we didn't have to make it complicated for dudes who went to music school who play horns. We didn't have to like write lyrics or anything. It was just very basic and free. It could be like, here's two chords. Let's play these two chords. Everybody take a solo. Go. You know, and that was really the beauty of it. You know, now that we've been playing for like 5 years as Money Cheech already, it's gotten a little bit more strict. You know, we've got songs now and people write things and we've created our own stylistic language specific just to Money Chicha, you know. But it grew out of that kind of like resistance to all of that. And it goes beyond just the resistance to like having to have like such an organized, structured hierarchy of compartmentalization with a huge band. You know, it goes beyond that. It also gets to like how we record. It was like, you know, instead of having one of the things that was so frustrating was like endless percussion overdubs with a percussion band, you know, or endless horn overdubs because they want to like stack horns and make it sound huge or nail every note perfectly or whatever. Or the vocalists who want to like nail every note right. We're just like, screw that. We're sick of that. We want something where when we record, there's no click, there's no headphones. We go in a room together. We play the song, warts and all. If there's mistakes in there, we either live with them or record it again, you know? And you just...
That's how you did Echo in Mexico?
For the most part.
Yeah. Is that how you say it, right?
Yes, Echo in Mexico.
Just making sure.
It's a play on words, you know?
Yeah.
But it really doesn't make any sense. It's silly. It's like...
That's the other thing is you don't need to have titles that make sense. You don't have to do anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like a point of conversation, you know, like we're talking about it now. And I've had like our publicist, you know, I hired a publicist for this thing and he came back to me. Was like, how is it pronounced? I have all these DJs asking. And I was like, yes, I know. They're convinced that we misspelled it on, you know, they're like, it's Echo in Mexico, right? And I'm like, no, the name of the song is Echo. It says it on the title. It's written on there. You think like we missed this editorial oversight, like. 5 times on the album? No, it's intentional. It's a joke, you know? It's like...
I get it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a play on words, but it's also heavy on the reverb. But at the same time, it makes no sense because the music's not really Mexican. We're from Texas, you know?
Yeah.
And if anything, it goes back to music from Peru and Colombia more than Mexico.
Yeah.
But...
It's interesting because I'm Cuban and I grew up, you know, my grandma's house, there's that kind of... There's salsa being played and, you know... Benny Moraes and Perez Prada, guys like that. But the subtle differences between the countries and the styles it's fascinating.
Yeah.
To me.
Well, that's one thing that struck me early on in the Grupo experience is like, I felt like we were outsiders looking in to a certain extent. We were from the border, you know, so we were literally looking, you know, a mile away into Latin America, into Mexico, you know, and Mexico is like the end of this huge, beautiful tapestry of cultures and musics and whatever. But everybody's very nationalistic and very specific. You know, the Puerto Ricans are purists about their style of salsa. Yes. Cubans don't necessarily like the Puerto Rican style. They're purists about their style.
There's nothing really Cubans like about Puerto Ricans.
You know, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. You know, the Colombians have their way of doing stuff and everybody thinks they're wrong. Whatever. Right, they're all like very nationalistic about it. And we didn't have any of that. We liked it all and we didn't know at first. We just absorbed it all and wanted to interpret it our own way. And it made me think about, because we were from the border, we kind of, you know, we spoke some Spanish and went to Mexico every day as teenagers to drink and listen to music on the radio and in the club, in the cantinas, and we loved to go see what they called Colombiana bands that played, you know, cumbia music all night long in these really dingy places that if our parents knew we went there, they would have been mortified. You know, we would go and drink all night long with our girlfriends and we were in a room full of basically, you know, prostitutes and cowboys on their weekend off, you know, just getting passed out drunk at tables. And at that time, it was a different reality. You know, we weren't afraid of getting kidnapped by cartels and ransom.
right.
The biggest issue was the police shaking you down for $20 for some bullshit offense, you know? Yeah. But so to me, it struck me early on, like I was saying, that we were on the outside looking in. And it reminds me of like the British invasion. You know, these guys thought that they were bluesmen. Like the Rolling Stones, if you ever read Keith Richards' autobiography, Life or whatever, he says, we thought we were the baddest bluesmen in England.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what they wanted to be. But they didn't sound anything like the blues. They listened to the blues exclusively, but they didn't have the context. They didn't understand
Chicago
versus
Louisiana,
the Delta,
St. Louis.
You know, exactly. And they probably didn't understand all the words that people were saying with their thick accents properly. You know, they just absorbed it and came out with their own weird interpretation. And that's how I always felt like our version of Latin music is. It's like we're on the outside looking in. We speak Spanish, but we don't understand all the minutiae and the technicalities and the different nations and countries. And, you know, like now we can recognize the difference between a Colombian salsa and a Puerto Rican salsa and a Cuban salsa and a New York salsa, you know. And I'm not talking about sauce, you know.
New York City.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, like it's not a personal thing, Chris. It wasn't like a nationalistic, like we didn't identify
right
with it that way. Like this is us, you know.
But the cool thing is then you developed your own voice. So then whatever you guys do, it always sounds like a part, you know, it sounds like it came through you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a beautiful thing. You know, I love the Rolling Stones. I love all these bands, Cream or whatever, that they thought they were blues bands, and they're not at all a blues band, you know, but what they came up with was awesome. And I feel the same way about our music. Like to me, it's one of the challenges is that people who hear it are like quick to try and dismiss it as salsa music or something like that. They're like, oh, they're just a salsa band. You know, like, do you even know what you're talking about? If you put us side by side with a salsa band and played the two musics together, the only thing that's going to sound the same is the congas.
Yeah.
Literally the conga patterns, maybe the cowbell pattern, whatever, but they're not going to have a drum set. They're not going to have electric guitar and bass. They're not going to have the same kind of horns we do. You know, they're going to have probably all trumpets or maybe all trombones. You know, they're not going to have a Barry saxophone in there. Yeah. They're not going to have a three-piece funk-style horn section. They're not going to, you know.
Or like in the case of Money Chicha, they're not going to have some weird old synths and shit going on. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, Money Chicha is a little bit different because I think as far as the instrumentation goes, that one is as close to the original as you can get. You know, like the music that inspired it was chicha music. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the genre of chicha music.
I am through you.
Okay, well.
You look so disappointed.
Well, that's like saying, are you familiar with salsa music? And you're like, yeah, I am through Grupo Fantasma. Yeah. You know, I'd be like, well, you're kind of not really getting real salsa music. Like through us, you're not getting real chicha music.
Right. But through reading and stuff, your bio, I do want to go research some of that 60s and 70s Colombian and Peruvian.
See. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the same situation all over again. You know, our instrumentation is similar. We use goofy combo organs and reverbed out guitars, bass, and percussion. You know, that's like the main thing that they used, you know, in the old chicha style music. But they just had a different aesthetic, I guess. You know, stuff didn't have a lot of bass. You know, it was very tinny. The sound of the reverb was very specific. They liked to use this really tacky kind of slapback delay on the vocals, and they liked to have singers a lot of times who would sing way outside of their high register, you know, so it sounds really pinched and weird. And on top of that, like the way that they play guitar is very different as well. You know, there's no bluesiness to it. They don't bend the notes hardly ever. It's a very trilly kind of sound, like, you know, kind of thing. A lot of finger picking involved, you know. So even though the instruments are the same, our approach was different in those regards, you know. So like, whereas they had timbales, we have a guy who plays timbales kind of like it's a drum set. He's got a hi-hat and a kick drum, you know.
I like that about you guys.
Yeah, that was one of the... I kind of wish we didn't have a kick drum. We don't have a kick drum on the album. And for the longest time, we didn't have one at all. But, you know, our drummer just kept trying to bring it out. And finally, we got tired of resisting. It's just like, okay, whatever. If it makes you feel happy. It's like a security blanket to me. But I personally prefer not having a kick drum, you know, because it's so unique not having that. That's like just, I mean, the fact we don't have a snare drum is nice to me. It's like there's no snare. Yeah. People want to hear a snare. They don't hear it you make it happen another way. You can still be funky without a snare.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, back on the kick drum thing, I saw you guys at Solstice Fest last year when it was a day like today.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of real humid and hot and gross. And you guys were fucking awesome that day. But the kick drum, I felt really came through.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking about it now. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds weird. Maybe in the gallery, not so much.
It helps, I guess, as far as, like, rooting the downbeats and what have you. And it gives us a little bit more rhythmic stuff going on. And, you know, John, as good of a timbale player as he's really a drummer. He's a great drummer. So for him, it's like if, you know, you were a guitar player and someone's like, okay, you can't use those two strings. Now play it. You know, and you're like, okay, I can still kick ass on a guitar, but there's stuff I can't do without those two strings or something, you know?
Let me ask you this. When you did the album and you didn't use kick drum, you recorded it live?
That album was recorded over a long period of time.
Echo in Mexico?
Echo in Mexico was recorded over a long period of time, like 3 or 4 years it took us to record that thing.
Wow.
Yeah, because we're so busy with our other stuff, and we would just like, it's so hard to organize anything with this many people, you know? It's just like, hey, do you guys want to get together and record? And it'll be like 5 yeses and 1, oh, I got a thing.
Right.
You know? So it's just really hard to get everybody together. You know, even though it took 4 years to get it together, we probably could have done the whole thing in 2 weeks if we had just done it all at once, you know? Some of the stuff was very live altogether. So, for instance, Animalitos, Echo en México, Lamento en la Selva, those 3 songs we recorded at Daniel McNeil's house. And he had a vintage board, MCI 2-inch recorder kind of thing he wanted to use. And we recorded it all in one room, no headphones, anything. There was only 5 of us. Adrian isn't on those songs at all. And then we did some overdubs of, like, you know, Guido, you know, and that was about it. You know, that was the song. You know, hand claps. I think we did hand claps on one song. Other songs we recorded at Sam Pat Love's place, the Fresh Up Club, and those were similarly recorded all together. But in a couple cases, we were like, okay, don't do the solo. We'll do the solo as an overdub or added additional overdub kind of stuff. But all the rhythm stuff on all the songs, for the most part, was recorded like that. There's a couple interludes which were recorded a little bit different, where we had like just recordings of the drummers jamming, and we just chopped up some of that stuff. And then, you know, I played floor tom and Beto played Guido on it. And then I played accordion, you know, and those were kind of studio constructions. Those were a little bit different. And there's a song called La Cordillera that Beto wrote, which is also kind of a little bit of a studio construction, because it was really just him and myself, and then Lou on the congas, and Jose Galeano, who happened to be staying at Beto's house at the time, the singer and timbali player for Grupo Fantasma. Jose, he actually suffered a very unfortunate situation where during the great floods of 2013, he lost everything. His house was completely underwater. Both his cars destroyed. You know, he saved some stuff by seeing. He woke up to the water at the foot of his bed, you know. So he, like, grabbed all his instruments and threw them in the attic, and then climbed up in the attic with his dog and watched as the water rose. And he was like, it got to the top of his car, and he was thinking, am I going to have to swim out of here? Am I going to have to cut a hole in the roof, like, new, you know, Katrina style.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, it stopped and the water receded. And, you know, his house was ruined. Everything was ruined except the instruments and stuff that he threw up in the attic. So for a while, he was staying at Beto's house, you know, while he was dealing with insurance and a settlement. The city bought him out. And now he's fine. He's got a house in Kyle. Everything worked out all right. You know, he got his stuff taken care of. But there was like a year there where he was just like dealing with some heavy duty stuff. And, you know, to his credit, he's such a positive, beautiful cat that he like got through it. You know, he kept his head straight on, like, you know, he's great. You know, he's bounced back, and it's inspirational how well he handled it. You know, like, I would have lost my shit, you know, not just my physical shit, but my mental shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But he happened to be at Bethel's house at the time, and we were like, hey, we're going to record this track. Can you play cowbell? He was like, okay. So he played cowbell on that one track, and it was just like guitar, bass, congas, and cowbell. And then later on, like 2 months later, 3 months later, I was at Bethel's house, and you're like, okay, let's add something to that. And I was like, I'll play some keyboards. You know, I played keyboards on it. And then later on after that, we got Lou to come and do some floor tom stuff. And then Bethel put another guitar part on it. And we were like, okay, it's a song.
Yeah.
So probably 80% of that album was live in a room, you know, with overdubs to give it some more flavor. And then there was those few songs that were studio constructions. But in general, it was a very organic kind of old school style of recording where you record all of the rhythm tracks. You have the song down, warts and all, and then you just add a couple little flavors to give it some more interest, like a, you know, a little atmospheric keyboard pad here, some hand percussion, or some little elements that'll just help it be more exciting than just straight down, you know.
Yeah. And you guys, you have a, you, the Money Chicha has a show coming up on September 5th at Pearl in San Antonio.
That's correct.
And then Grupo Fantasma is doing Scoot In on the 9th, and then the next day, Alexandria, Virginia. I hope that's a flyout date.
It's not the next day. It's the next weekend, I think.
Oh, that's weird, because I got them written down like that. Maybe I wrote them down wrong.
Anyway, it is a flyout. Yeah, we're playing in D.C. or whatever.
And then September 22nd through 25th, San Diego, Los Angeles, Santa Cruz, and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. People can go to GrupoFantasma.com for that, but then to find out where Money Chicha is playing, you can go to moneychicha.com, and I guess it's brownout.com too, right?
Brownoutmusic.com.
Brownoutmusic.com. Yeah. I have Brown Sabbath on vinyl.
Sweet.
Yeah, I need to get the Money Chicha on vinyl, man.
I don't have a copy with me.
That's all right, I'll buy it.
I have a copy of a 45.
Oh, yeah?
I can give you a 45.
That'd be killer. I love you guys. I really do. Are you going to do another stint at the gallery? Because that's a really great place to see
you guys.
I
would love to, man. It's just... It's weird because on the one hand, you feel like you've outgrown it because you're like, okay, we've got an album now. We need to tour. We need to like do the more grown-up stuff where you like promote a show months in advance and, you know, all that kind of crap that you have to do to get your numbers up to make more money. And,
of course.
And to be able to save money moreover so that you can tour and expand outwards, you know, just like any other business. But at the same time, it's a lot of fun, you know, and that was, it's really nice to be able to just be like, where are you going to be Monday night? I'm going to be at the gallery. Tell everybody, you know, and a lot of people come out and get down and it's kind of like, you know, it's not terrible. You know, you still get tips and people buying stuff and it's like a workshop. There's no stress either of having to promote a gig heavily or having to like put on any kind of show where you feel like, well, somebody paid a lot of money to get here. It's like, no, it's a door deal where they come in and tip if they want, you know, and we get a little bit of the bar. So,
but there's something about that room that lends itself to this sort of like magic that doesn't happen in other rooms. It's its own. I'm not saying that magic doesn't happen anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying there's a very specific magic that happens up there. Like going there on a Monday and seeing Eli and then you guys is like having a three-way with badass models. You know what I mean? Like you just feel satiated and satisfied after that. You feel, you know, you feel inspired. You feel like you want to take on the world.
No doubt. I love the jam element of it too, where you're just like, okay, let's just jam and see what song happens next, you know, or when our friends are there and we're like, hey, come sit in, you know, David is here, grab a guitar, play the organ, whatever, or whoever happens to be there, you know, Eli will sit in with us, or we've had some, anything from like random friends of ours who just happen to be passing through town to like, you know, badass cats who happen to be in town. Like, oh, you want to come play some guitar on this? Sure. You know, it's a great venue for that sort of thing. You know, I honestly wish we could have more guest stuff happen. Cause to me, it's like, I'm not making a bunch of money out here and it's Monday night. I love jamming and hanging out with musicians and seeing what happens, you know, experimenting.
Yeah. Well, people should get the album. Echo Mexico is really, really great. Is there anything that I'm missing? I'm sure there's a ton of shit we could just keep on talking about.
Yeah, well, the album's on Vampy Soul.
Okay.
V-A-M-P-I-S-O-U-L, so like Vampire, Vampy Soul. It's a label out of Spain. It's a subsidiary of Munster Records, like Herman Munster.
Okay.
And they're great folks. They put out a lot of really cool stuff, mainly reissues of Latin music stuff and psychedelic garage rock kind of things. But they also have a few like more modern bands like ourselves.
Yeah, one of the great Latin psych rock bands. Yeah.
I guess so.
Is that a good thing to say?
Psych rock, yeah, for sure. I kind of feel like that's kind of the direction we're headed in these days anyway. In all of our bands, it's more towards a psych rock thing. We're like okay, we don't want people calling us salsa anymore. We're a Latin band, but that doesn't have to define us, you know? Like, one of our big inspirations as far as a career goes is Los Lobos. You know, we were fortunate that the Grupo album, we got to meet and work with Steve Berlin, who produced it.
Oh, yeah.
And we've kind of created a relationship as friends with him. You know, we play fantasy football on a league with Steve. He comes through. He recorded with us on our recent Austin City Limits taping and stuff.
Awesome.
But, you know, his band is a huge influence on us because of the way they've been able to define themselves. They're like, yeah, we're a Latin band.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. We can play Mexican music, conjunto music, salsa, cumbia, but we can also play blues, rock, folk, Americana, funk, jazz. We can do whatever we want, you know, just because we're Latinos doesn't mean we have to play.
Adhere to one thing. You know? Yeah.
And that's kind of where we're at this point. We're like, okay, we're 16 years in. If we never have to play another salsa track, that's fine. Or if we want to do a whole salsa album, we can do that too. You know, we love all of that stuff and we're not trying to dismiss it, but we also want people to recognize that we've done all kinds of stuff. We've played with GZA of the Wu-Tang Clan, and we've played with Prince, and we've played with Daniel Johnston. You know, the list goes on and on. We've played with the Los Lobos guys and with Carl Denson and, you know, whatever. There's like all over the map stuff, and we're capable of playing all this different stuff. And, you know, the fact that we have Latino heritage is great, but it's not all that we do. We can do anything.
Yeah.
And moreover, we want to do other stuff. You know, we want to play, you know, ballads, and we want to play rock songs, and we want to play the blues, and we want to play all this other stuff that we can play, you know?
Yeah. Well,
And Chicha.
Well, people need to get out there and follow. If by chance you live under a rock and don't know these bands, get out there and get involved. It's a great experience seeing you live and hearing your music and your records. Thank you so much for coming, Greg.
That was my pleasure. Thanks.
Great dude, man. From Money Chicha, Brownout, and Grupo Fantasma, that is Greg Gonzalez. Pick up Money Chicha's new album, Echo, in Mexico. Available now. Go to moneychicha.com. Go check them out September 5th at Pearl in San Antonio. And also, don't forget, Grupo Fantasma's playing at the Scoot Inn in Austin on September 9th. And they are playing at Gateway Park in Alexandria, Virginia on September 10th. And September 22nd through 25th, they will be in the West Coast, San Diego, Los Angeles, Santa Cruz, and San Francisco. All right? I want to thank Greg for coming by. He's a super interesting guy. What a nice guy. All those bands are fantastic. Money Chicha, I've gotten to see them a lot over the last couple of years, going to the residency over at the Continental Club Gallery. And what a lovely, lovely group of people, amazing musicians, and just a rad experience seeing them play. All right? Get out there and see them. Go to moneychicha.com, pick up their album Echo in Mexico. Okay? Hey, while you're out there looking up Money Chicha stuff and Brownout stuff and Grupo Fantasma stuff, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher. You will get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday, all right? And don't forget, you can like our Facebook page. You can follow me on the Twitters and Instagrams. I am at Johnny Gowdy, all right? Let's hear some more music from Money Chicha's album, Echo en Mexico, available now. Get out there, get it, pick it up, go see them September 5th at Pearl in San Antonio. Have a great week. Let's get down.